He was one of the most fabulous scholars I've ever met in my life. I studied under him for 5 years. And for 5 years, the man lectured 3 times a week, twice a week some years, from 9 to 1, without notes. He never used notes. Zeitlin died on a few years ago. I specialized under him in what we call rabbinic literature. That meant the entire field of Talmud, post-Talmudic until, you might say, the modern period. He wrote many, many, many books and monographs. And my own field in rabbinic literature was the Second Commonwealth and then the 13th, 14th, and 15th centuries. Matter of fact, my dissertation, probably I might call it even dissertations because I wrote two, one in Hebrew, one in English, dealt with the 14th century Provence.
Provence?
Yeah. You see, Perpignan, which is in southern Spain. My dear interest, I had selected one of the great scholars of Provence of that period who lived in Perpignan.
Could you spell that, please?
Perpignan. It's Francis Perpignan. And the encyclopedia had only 14 lines about it. Now, this man was one of the great rabbinic scholars. He was an extremely liberal philosopher. He wrote a commentary on the entire Talmud, an entire Bible, and on philosophical themes of ethics and so on, and participated in the quarrel that existed at that period of time in Spain regarding the teaching of philosophy. And when I wrote a volume about him based on his writings, which I was already able to acquire, commentator, as philosopher, as historian, for history and everything. When I was finished with his book, it took me 3 years, I discovered that in Parma, Italy, in the library of Parma, Italy, there's an original manuscript of him on one of the, a commentary on one of the books in the Talmud. And so I got the manuscript.
You went there. Did you have a copy?
No, I didn't go. But I just photographed for me. It was written in 14th century Hebrew script, which is completely different. It had to be deciphered. And I edited that text in Hebrew. So I had actually two.
Yeah,
and when I came to for the faculty, there was a very big struggle among them which one to accept. Either way, you can't write two theses, either one or the other. And they decided to accept the text, and I should use the first that I wrote, the first book on about me.
About him.
Use it as a introduction. Well, unfortunately, this was never published because something happened which prevented me from publishing it, especially with money. was in 1938. And at that time, the president of DROPC was Dr. Cyrus Adler, who was president of the American Jewish Committee, president of DROPC, president of Houston Law Seminary. And he had promised to get me $10,000 for publication that would cost from one man. I wouldn't mention his name. He was supposed to contact him during the summer, and that summer, this man became famous in the United States for establishing God, one of the founders of the Council for Judaism.
That's where his money decided
and,
to go.
And you know what the Council for Judaism was, the anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, anti-everything. And of course, Adler would there's no other source available in those days. I made several copies, and they are in some libraries. And it's never seen light. And now, for example, years later, it was too late, and meant that I would have had to restudy these things, rewrite it, and I became involved in so many other things that I just didn't get the time.
Yeah. Oh, so much effort and so many years and so much writing
I
went into
tell you
it.
An interesting story. DROPC had 50 students probably, or about that at that time. I was the 50th graduate. And the first graduate of DROPC was the famous Dr. Bernard Revel, R-E-V-E-L, who founded the Yeshiva University, was president of Yeshiva University.
He was the first graduate.
He was the first. I was the 50th. Mm-hmm. Out of the 50 graduates, over more than 30 were full professors, and some of them of enormous renown. Throughout the world. It was a great school. Now, in DROPC, there were no points, no credits. You came and you could sit 10 years, 20 years, never get the degree. You could take all the courses you want.
How did one support oneself?
No, there was no tuition.
Really?
Yeah. You see, this was endowed by a lawyer in Philadelphia many years ago, beginning of the century, by the name of Aaron DROPC. When I came to DROPC, I enrolled in three departments. The major was rabbinics, the two minors were history and Bible. And then, of course, Semitic languages, which I knew a little bit, I was able to take some work there. I had a job in New York. That time, the principal of the school in the Bronx.
You had a job as a principal of the school in the Bronx?
In the Bronx. Now, to go to Philadelphia, give up the job in those days was a extremely precarious thing. You could find easily a job in Philadelphia. And so I commuted. I was given permission to commute twice a week. Make a 7 o'clock train in the morning, get to Philadelphia about 8:30, North Philadelphia, and then make a 1 o'clock train back. So, only two of us were permitted ever to do it in DROPC. The one whom I followed was Dr. Robert Gordas, one of the great rabbis in this country, great scholars. Just retired as professor and two chairs of philosophy and theology at the seminary. He preceded me, and he was given permission to commute. I was given permission.
But between your job and studying, did you have any free time?
I would make the 1:15 train back, get to New York, Pennsylvania Station, take a train to the Bronx, stay in my job until about 8 o'clock, go back. I didn't go to Rockaway. I had a room in New York, hotel. Go back, study, and make another train the next morning. And I did it for a number of years. After 3 years, I came to my professor, Zeitlin, and I said, when do you think I should begin writing my doctoral dissertation? And Zeitlin looked at me and he said, you're still ignorant. What's your hurry? So I stayed another year. At the end of that year, he comes over to me and he says, well, how long are you going to stay here? That was his signal and that was the symbol. Then I got married.
Uh-huh. See where that fits in. Where did you have time to fit that in?
How'd
you meet your wife?
It's a long
on the train. She must have been on the train. You didn't have any other time.
She was the first girl I met in the United States.
Oh, come on. Really?
Uh-huh. When I came to this country, I was very young, and she was my age. So in any event...
So she lived near you?
Yeah, we lived in the same town. So when I got married, you wouldn't believe it, would you?
No.
For the last year before I got my doctorate, the year before, and I still had to commute. So I gave up my job. I moved to Philadelphia for 1 year. And I got a stipend from Dr. Adler. She stayed in New York, and I would come home weekend. I would come home on Thursday night, and on Sunday I would go back to Philadelphia for a year.
Tell us some more about what she was doing. First of all, what was her maiden name?
Mahler, M-A-H-L-E-R. When she graduated high school, she fell into the Depression days. She got a job in the synagogue as a secretary. And she stayed there for many years. She called it that day. In the same town, the same community. So I actually spent 5 years at Dropsy. I could have had my degree in 2 years or 3 years because I had all the requirements. But you see, in Dropsy, it wasn't a question of requirement. The credits meant absolutely nothing.
Right. It was like a sensitive feeling about when you had studied enough that it was time for you to start investigating.
And when the professor thought that you were ready, they gave us examinations. Now, the examination, actually, there were examinations at the end of each year, but 1 hour of oral exam for the whole faculty. The final exam consisted of a written exam, for 3 days, actually. And I'll never forget, five applied, and two passed.
Tremendous pressure.
So when I got my degree in 38, was the other person that passed with me was a member named of Zev Vilnai. Zev Vilnai is one of the outstanding personalities in Israel, much older than I, but he got his PhD together with me. He wrote many books. He trained all the guides in Israel,
mm-hmm.
And he is the great authority on topography. Came from Israel, he went to England, from England he came to Dropsy. So we were two of us, and we got another great man.
You said you met your wife really when you first came over, that she was in the neighborhood. All those years you were studying and moving around from one place to another, you kept in touch and visited each other, or did you not see each other?
Yeah.
And then
No, I went away. I lived in New York. When I went to Columbia, I lived at John Jay Hall. And she stayed up there from Rockaway. But we would see each other, and she was coming to New York. I would kind of go home to my parents and live. The year I spent in Johns Hopkins, I lived in Baltimore. I'd come out for a weekend, occasionally, not weekends, but holidays. And then I moved back to New York. You see, back to New York, when I was to drop city. I left home, my home in Rockaway, as soon as I graduated Columbia, before I entered the Peter's College. Then I lived at John Jay Hall at Columbia.
So you got married around 1937?
1933, I think.
You got married in 1933?
I think so.
1937? You think so. You said about a year before you got your PhD. When did you get married? You have to go out there and ask your wife when you got married?
Well, I've been married about, I think, 47 years, something like that.
That's how, 47 years ago. Yeah. This is goodbye. So then you got married, and then you went to Philadelphia and you were commuting that one last year when you finished.
One last year, yeah.
And then you said you went to Yeshiva University and got a rabbinical degree. That was already when you came back, and you came back and started working?
I just took exams.
Oh, I see. So what?
Because I didn't need any more study.
And were you still working as the principal? You had given up that job as the principal, or you went back to the same spot, or what was
I
that?
I gave up the job as a principal, and when I came back with my degree, I stayed, and I was principal in Rockaway for 1 year in the school where she was working. And
do you remember what school?
What?
Do you remember what the school was?
Yeah, well, was it
a day school or
a
university?
A
Hebrew school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then I, in 41, in 1941, I was, at that time, the Hadassah and the Zionist organization established an American Zionist Youth Commission. And the Youth Commission had numerous branches. I was, at that time, appointed National Director of Young Judea, which was the most important of the youth delegate organizations in the Zionist movement. That begins a story in itself, because it's a milestone in the history of American Zionist youth. I established the first Jewish study camp in America, with a grant through, not from his own pocket, but through Justice Louis Brandeis. He gave me a letter to a man by the name of Harold Levine in Leominster, Massachusetts. He gave me $75,000. I went out and I bought 168 acres of land in New Hampshire and built the camp. And that was the first, and in that camp, weekends, came my associate, Shlomo Barvin. That's where the Brandeis Camp Institute is established for weekends, and from there they moved later on. He got the grant and developed nationally the Brandeis Camp Institute. Finally ended up in California, the great institution.
So you were there in the
fourth? But the beginning of, there was no Ramad, there was no Mossad. You see, the wall is only sprouting out. This was the first study camp where, for teenagers, you see, perhaps for Jewish teenagers in Jewish studies, in definitely in this country, like it, kids would study from 9 to 1, and then there was a full camp program.
And were you there in the summers directing
it?
Nice.
And from there I developed a very interesting thing. The first people who worked with me in that camp later went to Israel. And they, and the South Americans, established Kabloom.
Kabloom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're still there. They're still alive and still there, the young people.
Okay, and they established in South America.
They established in Israel, Kabloom. And we also, another thing which we did at that time was really putting on the map, or to what extent it existed before, I don't know, but the Boy Scout movement in Israel. It's a thing.
Did you ever have a desire to get Israel? Live?
Well, I was 19 times in Israel. In 1960, Shazal came to the United States and asked me to, we should come to Israel. And Stella and I went there for 2 months as his guests in the summer. Avi Eben was Minister of Education and wanted me to come into the Minister of Education. And after 2 months I realized that for me I would never have been able to survive. Now, I couldn't see myself involved in society with so many parties because I'm not political.
Mm-hmm.
I get bored with political meetings.
So here it was a lot freer. You didn't have to deal with that. You could get involved with institutions and educational.
Well, you see,
committees.
When I was 5 years in Young Judea, I decided to leave and go back to the field of Jewish education. Then I joined the American Association.
But when you say it wasn't a Jewish education of sorts, I mean, when you say you
went to... I'm talking about formal education.
Uh-huh. So this is what you'd call it informal Jewish education,
yeah,
with the camp experience,
yeah,
and the institutes.
At that time, the American Association for Jewish Education, the national agency, was established already a few years before. And I was asked to come in as associate director. And I came in there in 1946, and I stayed until 1951 when I came to Pittsburgh.
Wait, 46 to 51, you were where? I lost track right there, what you said.
46.
Yeah.
I stayed in Young Judea from 41 to 46.
I see. Uh-huh.
46, I joined the American Association for Jewish Education and stayed until...
51.
The what made me leave the American Association is something else. In 1950, you ever hear of Moshe Sharet? Well, he was Prime Minister of Israel for a while after Ben Gurion resigned. He was the greatest, I would say, the intellectual force in Israel. Moshe Sharet in America, his counterpart in terms of intellectual achievements, was Chaim Weinberg, a very famous philosopher. Sharet came to this country, and he and Chaim Weinberg invited me to go to South America for a period of months. Because they've been having a lot of difficulties in South American Jewry. They wanted me to make a study of Jewish life, and particularly of education in South American countries.
All over?
The reason was that, you see, in the South American countries, and I'm going to mention names, Jewish life is not organized around the synagogue like in America, but around the Zionist movement.
Mm-hmm.
A replica of the European Zionist life. And the country they wanted me to go to was Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, Chile and Peru. I went and I spent quite a bit of time there surveying, and I returned. I wrote a report on each city, each country, which was presented to the Zionist Congress in Jerusalem at the time ago, the Congress of Jerusalem.
Did your family go with you or just you?
I went with myself. And when I came back, I was really exhausted. I traveled by everything, by train and plane and horse car.
Did you have to have interpreters, or did you know Spanish?
In Spanish and Portuguese, I had interpreters. The Jewish agency actually gave me some sort of diplomatic immunity I had, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Wherever I came, I had the Jewish consulate or the Jewish embassy, you see, take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, I had a person who was with me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the official government, Israeli government, as a representative of the government, so I was able to move everywhere and have help.
Did they speak Hebrew and Yiddish also? The people that you were mostly with?
Hebrew and Yiddish. And I suppose some of them spoke English. When I came back, the American Association had began to deteriorate because the chief, Dr. Chipkin, was ill, and in my absence, I was his right-hand person. In my absence, there was nobody do what I could do. And so I decided that national agent jobs were not for me. Just too much trouble. I used to spend 4 months out of the year traveling.
It's really strange.
And so some other time I'll tell you how Pittsburgh was presented. While I was away, one of my associates, Dr. Uriah Engelman, came here to make a study. Jewish education in Pittsburgh, and I was asked to come here by the Federation, the Federation of Knights and Jewish Fund, for 2 years to establish the agency which they recommended. Now, I'll give you a copy of this if you want. This is the first report, so you'll be able to get a picture of this thing, what happened, what I did in 2 years. Unfortunately, and I say, unfortunately, I stay there.
Why don't we maybe stop on that note, and then we'll pick up next time talking about Pittsburgh and you know, more details, because it's a tremendous amount of information.
You know what we can,
exactly. I think this is a really good point to wrap up this first session.
Yeah. You think there was a murder on television?
Why? What are you looking for?
I'm looking for a murder.
That could.